Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the Curzon Film Podcast. I'm Sam Howlett, and this week we're damn well wedded to the light as the star and the director of The Lighthouse, Willem Dafoe, and Robert Eggers spill their beans. Following the success of sleeper hit horror film The Witch, many eyes were on Robert Eggers to see what he'd do next. For his sophomore effort, Eggers has stayed in the world of period folklore horror, turning his beam to a remote New England lighthouse in the 1890s. Robert Pattinson plays Thomas Howard, a young apprentice sent to work for a lighthouse keeper, played by Willem Dafoe, on a desolate, deserted, and constantly foggy island far removed from any sense of reality. As tensions arise between the two men, the boundaries between fantasy and reality begin to crumble. Shot in stark black and white, The Lighthouse is a true original, something that has to be seen to be believed. During the London Film Festival, I was lucky enough to speak to the great Willem Dafoe, which you'll hear first, and one of the most interesting directors working today, Robert Eggers.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Okay, we're delighted to welcome Willem Dafoe to the Curzon Podcast.
Hey.
Thank you for joining us. So we're here to talk about The Lighthouse, of course. Do you want to start by telling us about when you first heard about the film from the director, Robert Eggers, and what his kind of pitch to you was, how he explained the film to you?
He didn't need much of a pitch because I had seen The Witch, and I knew little about it because I was away, and I went into it really clean. And I really responded to it. I thought, wow, there's a filmmaker here. So I told my representatives I wanted to meet him. So it's really a relationship I cultivated. We got along very well. And we said, yes, let's absolutely do something together. We talked about other projects, but this is the first one that came through. And he presented it to me in a very direct way. He basically said, this is a script, read it, it's you and Rob Pattinson, and yes or no.
And it was an instant yes, I imagine.
It was pretty instant yes. I mean, because clearly I was interested in him, and then two-hander implied that, you know, I'd have some stuff to do.
Yeah.
And then beautiful language, simple story, complex arc, interesting events, and the location and how we were going to shoot it all appealed to me. So
So your character then, Thomas Wake, what kind of an idea of this character did you have from reading the script, and what kind of person did you initially think of him, and how did that shape and how did that change during the process?
Yeah, I don't want to be glib, but I never have ideas. I don't have ideas for characters.
Yeah.
You know, what I think about is my way to inhabit something or find a relationship to it, so the relationship between me and the character sort of disappears. Mm-hmm. So I don't know who Thomas Wake is. Even after I shoot a film, sometimes I don't know who Thomas Wake is, but I know what happened.
Yeah.
I knew, you know, there's certain things that you just, that are clear.
Yeah.
This elevated language, I knew I was going to need an accent.
Yeah.
He Rob's a freak for research,
yep.
So he gave me a lot of pictures and things, so we had kind of a look in mind. Mm-hmm. I knew I had to grow a beard. I knew I wanted funky teeth, if my teeth weren't funky enough, but I knew I'd be wearing some fake teeth.
Yeah.
There are certain indications in the story about him having a limp. Mm-hmm. I knew I wanted to learn how to knit, even though you only see me knit for about 20 seconds in the movie. That was one of the things that was a key to the character. Things like that.
Yeah.
And then it's just really getting into the music and the rhythm of that text, and then making yourself available.
Yeah.
The costumes figure large in it because they affect how you move.
Mm-hmm.
And they affect your level of comfort.
Sure.
Because we're shooting in really extreme conditions.
Yeah, what was the shoot like? What was it like being on, was it real locations, I imagine, for a lot of it?
Yeah, I love working on locations because it, you know, it tells you what to do. It informs everything. The more extreme, the more you're directed by the situation, and it has a sense of truth and it feels more organic.
Yeah.
Because you can trace very clearly where things come from, and then you leap off from that. It was extreme. I mean, I always get self-conscious because actors love to brag about how hard their job is. But, you know, it was very extreme.
Yeah.
But that was one of the pleasures of it. And also, since it's basically a two-hander, you're on set all the time, which I love, because then you get in kind of a rhythm and you become like part of the crew. You become an extension. You see the film being made and you become an extension of the director, and you get less concerned about yourself and think more about the whole thing.
Mm.
And particularly when it's a two-hander, I mean, I wasn't always there when Rob was shooting, but it's like, you know, I become him, he becomes me a little bit, in sense of just as far as goodwill and aspiration that. So that's interesting.
Okay. So as the film is a two-hander then, can you talk about the process of working with Robert Pattinson? So from like rehearsals to kind of finding that, finding the tone between the characters and how they would interact with each other, like both through the dialogue and through the physicality of how they interact with each other.
Well, so much of it is actually written in the story. I mean, even the Breaking Wind is written in the story. It is.
Right.
And, you know, the implication is the first time it happens, it's a kind of putting him in his place.
Yeah. This is my lighthouse. Yeah.
Well, you know, we're two very different characters.
Yeah.
And I think you create a process and an approach that's, you know, serves your different characters. So we were very different. Our process was as different as our jobs, or as our characters.
Yeah.
And we didn't talk much about things. We rehearsed a little bit. famously, Rob did not like rehearsal because he prefers to perform when the camera's there because he's afraid that things will lose their spontaneity. Okay. I don't require rehearsal. I always like to, you know, different approach for different movies, for different performances. But in this case, I appreciated rehearsal because the language of the camera is so specific. And in fact, we rehearsed, we blocked things out. The camera was set first. And then we would do the scene to the camera, as opposed to normally you find out what the scene is and then you set the camera. So that was good for me because it focuses you and you have to submit to the visual language, which is such a huge part of this. But the differences were quite extreme. But our tasks and who we are in the movie is quite different. I mean, particularly in the beginning. You can't shut me up. I'm talking all the time. He's very, you know, he doesn't say much at all. He's mysterious. He's, you know, you're with him doing tasks. He's not revealing who he is. I'm revealing too much, maybe. And for both of us, one place that we do meet is one thing that's beautifully written about these characters is you don't know what's real and what's a posture. And of course that all kind of gets dismantled as the play goes on. The play, I called it a play. Curious thing, huh?
Did it feel like a bit like a play at times because it's a two-hander? It's almost a chamber piece.
Yes, in the respect that it's two people really dealing with each other, but it's not a play at all because it's so steeped in, you know, film language and the sound score is incredible and the location and you know, there's no, play always implies, you know, a piece of literature. It's that and much more.
There was an interview.
Do I sound like I'm selling something?
I reread an interview you did where you spoke about the Florida Project and you spoke about that character as being, and that performance being a very natural, and how it made you feel very soulful playing someone who's very down to earth and very much a kind of, feels like a real person. This performance, it feels more operatic, more spectacle, because, you know, it's accent, it's the beard, it's all the soliloquies he does. What is it like as a performer going that big with this kind of performance?
It's the same. It's just it's just a different instrument, sort of. But your point of concentration is kind of the same. Somehow the target's the same. You know, you're trying to deal with this other person. You're trying to commit to these actions. You're. It's not that different internally.
Okay.
It's just the language and the arsenal that you're using is different.
Yeah. I think the tone of the film is really interesting, and the film as a genre film is interesting as well, because I think a lot of people expect this film to be a full-on horror film.
No, I'm crazy about getting that notion off the table.
Okay.
Because I think, you know, horror films you associate with jump scares and all that kind of thing.
Sure.
And I think people will like this movie, but if they go, knowing the nature of some people, you know, if they go expecting one thing and it's not taken to the place that they've decided should take them, then they won't be receptive enough to see the beauty of what it is. They'll say, well, I liked it, but that wasn't a horror film. Well, forget it. It's not a horror film. It's a film. But I think that's kind of irresistible because it's hard to identify what it is. And it's clearly a genre film with a very simple story, and there's a temptation to call it horror or something so people can relax and enjoy the pushed, the advanced, the sophisticated visual language and soundscape and things like that. Anytime you get out of naturalism, you know, you're really liberated to a place that people are much more generous with themselves as audiences. But you got to get them to that place first. And so that's why I think some people, for lack of better definition, call it a horror film. But it's not a horror film in the sense of traditional way.
Have you watched the film with an audience yet?
Yes, I have.
It's a really interesting audience film because you have the big foghorn opening and it's very intense and dark. And then, as you mentioned, there's the breaking wind. And I think that immediately sends a signal out that this isn't the film that you're expecting it was.
Yes. I mean, there's lots of humor in this.
Yeah.
You know, there's a whole black comedy part of it.
Yeah.
Because it's about, you know, people and their silly strategies for life and their beliefs. And when they get dismantled, it's about identity. And, you know, in a world now, you know, where everybody is kind of too much into themselves, it's interesting to see. And I think a lot of people will appreciate the humor.
Yeah. So you mentioned, going back to what you said earlier about you saw The Witch and you immediately wanted to reach out to Robert Eggers. Mm-hmm. What was it specifically about The Witch that made you think, A, this is a great new talent on the scene, and B, I really want to be a part of what he does next?
You know, I'm simple. Whenever I see a good movie, you know, if it makes sense, I say, hey, I want to be in that guy's next movie, that guy or that gal's next movie, you know? No, I cultivate that because there was something special about the touch of it. It, not unlike this, at least for me, you know, it's a simple yarn on one level, but as cinema, it's very sophisticated and it gives me a pleasure because it sends me places that only cinema can send me.
Yeah.
So that's why I liked it. A simple example is, you know, he's beautiful with this period detail.
Yeah.
It's not showy. It kind of, he makes the world without pointing at it. It's like he lives in it. He trusts it. He doesn't show off. It's a very, you know, he owns that world, Rob Eggers. And I think we created a world for The Lighthouse. He built those things. He found that land. All of them came from someplace. And you felt that. You felt the kind of history and the roots of everything we were doing without having to show it off. Who knows about how accurate those buttons were?
Yeah.
And it may seem like a kind of weird, you know, conceit or indulgence to, but you know what? It does make a difference. It does show up every once in a while. Definitely. You know, when you've got a light, a period clay pipe from an ember, there's probably better ways to do it, but we did it the real way, you know?
That
gives you an experience and gives you a little secret that you don't have unless you do it that way. And maybe it's minor, but after a while, those accumulate and you start to create a world. And you know, in movies, world creation is sort of what it's about. It's not just story and narrative and literature. It's about being, you know, that light on the screen takes you to a place that you've never been before.
Great. William Dafoe, thank you very much for your time.
Yep.
Okay, we're delighted to welcome Robert Eggers to the Curzon Film Podcast. Hello.
Hey.
Thanks for joining us.
My pleasure to be here.
So here, obviously, to talk about The Lighthouse. So was this very much the first thing you tried to get off the ground after The Witch? Was this your first move?
No. I thought it might have been when I was making The Witch, but I was trying to do some other larger studio films that were things that I wrote, but they were much larger in scale. But I thought it would be a good idea to have something smaller in my back pocket. So my brother and I wrote this while I was working on other things as well. And it was an idea that we had during the third year of The Witch not finding any financing. Mm-hmm. But we wrote it post-Witch.
Okay.
And strangely, of all the things, the smallest, least commercial, weirdest movie was the thing on my slate that got greenlit.
Okay. So when you first came up with the idea for The Lighthouse, did you approach it from the point of view of the story or the setting or the atmosphere? What was
my brother had an idea, a ghost story in a lighthouse.
Yeah.
And that conjured this black and white 35 millimeter crusty, dusty, rusty, musty world. And so I had the atmosphere and the smells and the vibe and the basic imagery when he said that simple sentence. And so then it was about getting into research to find a story that would match the atmosphere. I think people who don't like my movies would say, clearly the problem is that he comes to the table with the atmosphere first.
So in terms of the research you did then, what kind of stuff were you looking for? What stuff did you find that kind of shapes the film?
I mean, I could write a long book. Early on, we came across the story of Small's Lighthouse in Wales from earlier in the 19th century with two lighthouse keepers, one older, one younger, both named Thomas. And the fact that they were both named Thomas, I thought could be good and could have this film be a story about identity and devolve into something obscure. And I wanted it to kind of just be a little bit of a weirdy movie from the beginning, for better and for worse. And this is a two-hander. That was helpful. And from there, we're just reading as many lighthouse tales and tales of the sea as we can get our hands on, researching what a period lighthouse station was like and the manual, the rules, regulations, that manual that Rob reads in the movie was very helpful in creating a lot of scenes and ideas for scenes and scenes that didn't make it into the movie or into the script. A photograph of a period lighthouse station, as important as it is for creating the physical world when you're designing it, is also helpful to the story because you look at that boathouse that's always on every lighthouse station with the long runners going out into the sea and you think, well, what are we going to do with that? With my brother and I, when we had a semblance of a story, finally we kind of said, all right, well, what myths or fairy tales or folk tales does this most closely resemble that we accidentally reconjured? And now let's go back and to those myths and kind of tease those motifs out more heavily in the story that we're writing. But I mean, I'm like a sea shanty, a lumberjack song, a documentary about storms, a symbolist painting, a Durer engraving of a sea monster. I mean, just
everything. So in terms of the period detail, then I understand you went quite deep with like everything, like props. And I spoke to Willem earlier and he spoke about the pipe, the clay pipe that is an authentic kind of pipe that someone at that time would have had. Like, did you really sort of go out of your way to make everything be as authentic as possible?
Yeah. I mean, it's just the way I like to do things. It doesn't, I love Guillermo del Toro. Mm-hmm. And we do things like completely differently. He's creating worlds. His designers and himself are what is period correct, you know, to, you know, I mean, to what degree, I don't know, but that doesn't really matter. Even if they knew everything, they would just make choices that to create a rich, beautiful world to tell their story. And that might even be better. It might be better to say, what is the perfect lapel for that character that expresses who he is? But for me, I like to just say, that's the lapel that's on the uniform. Like, we're done with it. We're moving on. And, but I also think for me, with my movies, I like the world to be so credible that we can kind of go along with mermaids, more easily. Again, you know, when the whole world is a fantasy, you can go along with it too. Yeah. But this is just what I'm interested in, and I like doing the research. It's fun for me. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, all of my collaborators, we know what our bar is. It's a high bar, and it's called accurate, which is impossible. You know, like, it's always our interpretation. And if you go to a museum, it's an interpretation. It's never like, you can't know, and people's understanding of the past is also always changing, and so on and so forth. But I just find it an enriching way to work, even though it doesn't matter. It's just my way.
And going on from that, then, something that you also did with The Witch is the dialogue is often very sort of archaic and off the time. Is that another barrier when you're writing the screenplay, that you have, you know, only writing things that these characters would say, but also what they would say in this time? And is that like another barrier for you when you're writing?
It's not a barrier. It's very helpful. Yeah. I mean, it's not easy. It's very, very difficult, you know, to write in a half forgotten dialect. Yeah. But it's very satisfying as well. And it, again, like, it's just another piece to really create this unique atmosphere and unique world and unique characters. But I'm not saying it's good. I'm just saying it's unique.
Okay. And then the film is very much a two-hander with Willem Dafoe and Robert Pattinson. Can you talk about the process of working with those guys, creating those characters, creating the kind of the tension between them, the physicality between them? Was it all done in rehearsal? Was it all done straight on set? What was the kind of process of creating that mood and tension between them?
Well, they're great actors, obviously. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't difficult because they read the script, both of them, and they got it, and they both came in with a 1,000,000% passion, and they knew it was going to be tough, and they knew that the location was going to be punishing, but, you know, they signed up for it.
Yeah.
and we did rehearsals, but they were not to rehearse per se. It was basically just because the cinematic language of the film that I created with Jaron Blaschke, the photographer, was planned before they got there. So they needed to know their blocking in relation to the camera so that it could seem spontaneous and natural, and not look like they were just meat puppets hitting marks on the on the day. So they needed to come in knowing that stuff.
Okay. And then I don't know if I'm reading too much into this, but there's some similarities in the film to The Witch that kind of struck out to me, like this idea of people in the middle, almost in the middle of nowhere, surrounded by the sort of natural world, and then things encroaching into them. And but then we're like, The Witch is very much about like femininity, this is more masculinity. Are those kind of things that you've seen yourself, like, about this comparison?
Yeah, I mean, I did, like, all the, like, I obviously see everything that you're saying. It's clear as day.
Yeah.
I didn't go in with the intention of doing that, right. But clearly this is the, like, you know, phallic, toxic masculinity, like, companion piece to The Witch. Fine, but that just kind of happened. It wasn't like my intention. And, you know, part of the similarity is just that, like, I wanted to use another confined location to keep it control over everything. You know, we built every single building in the film, including the 74 working lighthouse tower, so I wanted to, like, have that control. So part of it is practical, part of it is also most authors have a primal narrative. There's very few Shakespeares who write different stories. Charles Dickens wrote one novel like over and over and over again, and A Christmas Carol as well. But mainly he had his thing and he did it. And so even if I'm, you know, have something with like a billion locations, I'm sure that you'll be able to find like plenty of similarities.
Great. Robert Eggers, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
That's it for this week's episode. Thank you very much for listening. If you have any thoughts on The Lighthouse, please let us know by emailing podcast@curzon.com or shouting at us on Twitter, where we are at Curzon Cinemas. We're available every week on iTunes, Acast, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, we'll be taking an in-depth look at one of the most talked about films of the past year, and maybe even the past decade, Parasite, where we'll be in conversation with Bong Joon-ho and his frequent collaborator, Tilda Swinton. See you then.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.